Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hey everyone. Welcome to Let's Get Civical.
This is the podcast that breaks down politics, government structure, and dives into the context of current events, but in a super fun way. I'm Lizzie Stewart, comedian, feminist, and political junkie.
And I'm Arden Walentowski, former Senate intern, campaign staffer, and political strategist.
In this episode, we're talking about Obergefell v. Hodges.
So grab your gay marriage.
And let's get civical.
Buddy.
Welcome to Let's Get Civical. I'm Lizzie Stewart.
And I'm Arden Walentowski.
And today we are just continuing to celebrate Pride because it is Pride Month here in the world. And so we decided to take on, we've been wanting to do this case for so long.
Yeah.
We talk about it truly almost every time we have to talk about a Supreme Court justice. But because a lot of them had a hand in it.
Yep.
But today we're going to talk about the infamous, the legendary, the landmark Obergefell v. Hodges case.
Yes.
Which effectively legalized gay marriage in U.S. So excited. Yep. So excited. And I'm also excited because this means anytime we do a case, we just live in Oyez.
I love it. Yeah.
Which is my favorite place on earth.
So good.
And it's just, it's nice. It's nice to remember, although we've had some positive cases come out recently, but it is nice to remember these like really positive landmark cases, you know?
Yeah.
Because this is now 4 years ago.
This
right?
Was, yes. This was in 2015. And this was also, this was like right after, like this one, this case couldn't have happened without the DOMA case and Edie Windsor. Yep. So, yep. You know, there's, it's building. And we're going to read some of the exchanges between the lawyers arguing the cases and the justices.
Yeah.
And I think you'll just find that there are, that the anti-gay marriage arguments are like, but marriage.
Oh my God. Literally. I don't think I've ever heard Antonin Scalia's voice, but I do think it sounds like that.
It does sound like that.
Quite simply, if you played The Princess Bride for me, I would say, could be Antonin Scalia. It's not.
Marriage. Oh, my
God.
So
it's very exciting. We're so excited to celebrate Pride in this court case. Yes. So let's just jump right into the facts of the case. So this these notes are coming from, of course, Oyez.
Oyez.
And of course, Cornell Law School. And of course, the National Center for Lesbian Rights. And, ooh, this one's new.
Yep.
The Constitution Accountability Center. Accountability in these days?
I know.
Unheard of.
I honestly don't know how it took us to episode 74 to find them
to get
as
to the
a
Constitutional
source.
Accountability Center. I know.
I was like, who is this? Oh, love.
Who are they? Okay, shout out to them and the work that they're doing. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so here are the facts of Obergefell v. Hodges. So, groups of same-sex couples sued their relevant state agencies in Ohio, Michigan, Kentucky, and Tennessee to challenge the constitutionality of those states' bans on same-sex marriage or refusal to recognize legal same-sex marriages that occurred in jurisdictions that provided for such marriages. So, like, you could get married in California, but then yeah. Tennessee would be like, I don't see it.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
It's insane.
So, again, as Arden said, this case was decided in 2015, and the plaintiffs in each case argued that the state's statutes violated the Equal Protection Clause and Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, and one group of plaintiffs also brought claims under the Civil Rights Act.
Yes.
We just thread it together, people.
She just keeps serving us up rights.
Literally. Just literally. Serve it up.
Serve it up.
Continuing with OAs. In all the cases, the trial court found in favor of the plaintiffs. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit reversed and held that the state's bans on same-sex marriage and refusal to recognize marriages performed in other states did not violate the couple's 14th Amendment rights to equal protection and due process. Okay, Sixth Circuit. Read the room.
What does equal protection mean if not equal protection?
Yeah. Equal, but not for them.
Not for them.
So that's kind of our facts of the case.
Yeah.
Keep going.
So like Lizzie said, the Obergefell v. Hodges case was a group of cases. And so Lizzie's going to talk about the Obergefell story later because it's very interesting and very sad. But there are other cases that we want to talk about because they are also human beings who also had a story to tell. So the first one is Tanko v. Haslam. This is coming from the National Center for Lesbian Rights. So, quote, three legally married same-sex couples challenged Tennessee laws that prevented the state from respecting their marriages and treating them the same as all other legally married couples in Tennessee. The Tennessee couples, who included a full-time Army reservist and two professors of veterinary medicine, all formerly lived and married in other states and later moved to Tennessee to pursue careers and make new homes for their families. Tennessee refused to respect the couple's lawful marriages and treated them as strangers to each other.
Not cute, Tennessee.
Not cute. Quote, to prevent the plaintiff's couples from continuing to be harmed by Tennessee's laws, a federal district court in Nashville, Tennessee ruled on March 14, 2014, that Tennessee officials must recognize the couple's marriages while their lawsuit was pending. The state appealed that ruling, close quote.
Of course. They did. Of course they did.
Like, you can't even have temporary rights while we decide if you get real rights.
Okay. Right. That's insane.
Okay.
Another case that was combined into this ruling was DeBoer v. Snyder, and this is coming from the Constitutional Accountability Center. Shout out. Okay, so this case was, so plaintiffs April DeBoer and Jane Rouse, both of whom have individually adopted children, filed a lawsuit in the Eastern District of Michigan challenging the state's ban on adoption by same-sex couples. Michigan law restricted second-parent adoption to married couples, a catch-22 for same-sex couples, since the state excluded them from marriage. Okay, perfect. Thank you, yeah. Michigan. Yeah. Thank you. Like, yeah, let's not give this child a loving home because it's
right.
Two women.
Yep.
You suck. Okay.
I know.
At the invitation of District Court Judge Bernard Friedman, the plaintiffs amended their complaint to challenge the underlying issues of the state's ban on same-sex marriage. Judge Friedman heard arguments on March 7th, 2013, but delayed ruling until after the Supreme Court's decision in United States v. Windsor and Hollingsworth v. Perry. So following further oral arguments and a trial, Judge Friedman on March 21st, 2014, ruled that Michigan's same-sex marriage ban was unconstitutional and violated the plaintiff's right to the equal protection of the law. The state, of course, appealed to the United States Court of Appeal for the Sixth Circuit, which stayed Judge Friedman's ruling pending appeal. Love.
Yeah.
Simply love these
Simply
states.
Love. So the next case under the Obergefell v. Hodges umbrella is Burke v. Bashir. This is coming from the Constitution Accountability Center. We love. Quote, four same-sex couples who married outside of the state challenged Kentucky laws that prohibited the state from recognizing their marriages and that excluded them from the benefits of marriage available to married opposite-sex couples, which was also, like, Edie Windsor's claim, because hers was about, like, right. If I was married, like, you're making me pay all this estate tax, but if I was married, which I legal, like, which I was, like, we were, this is a long-term relationship, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have had to pay this, like, it's, you know, like, a, she was also her argument. On February 12th, 2014, District Court Judge John G. Hayburn ruled that Kentucky's marriage laws violated the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. Do we see a theme? Do we see a theme?
The judges are like, I see it.
I see it.
I see it. I see you. I see it. Okay. Yeah.
In his opinion, Judge Hayburn declared that the state's laws treat gay and lesbian persons differently in a way that demeans them, and that Kentucky must recognize same-sex marriages performed in other states.
Okay, yes, Hayburn.
Yeah. He was like, that's yes. some bullshit. That's some
We're
bullshit.
We're treating them like second-class citizens.
Yep.
Come on. And this is in Kentucky?
I mean, shocking. I am
shocking.
Shocked.
Shocked.
Because Kentucky's attorney general declined to defend the marriage laws on appeal, the state's appeal to the United States Court of Appeals for the Sixth Court was pursued by Governor Steve Beshear.
Don't you have something else to do? I'm sorry. As governor, aren't you in Kentucky? I think you're a little busy, my dude.
I think you're busy. I also love that this one that the attorney general was like, I'm not.
I'm not gonna get this seems dicey. This seems like we're gonna lose.
The Sixth Circuit stayed Judge Hayburn's ruling pending appeal. So this is all now set up. All of these cases, like the next stop on this train is the United States Supreme Court.
Yes, they are about to knock, knock, ding, dong on SCOTUS's door.
Knock, knock, ding, dong.
We're here, guys.
Yeah.
Okay, and then so let's finally talk about the Obergefell story. And so this is coming from the Cornell Law School. Shout out to Cornell. So James Obergefell and his late partner, John Arthur, lived together in a committed relationship in Cincinnati, Ohio for 22 years until Arthur's passing on October 22, 2013. On July 11, 2013, after John Arthur was diagnosed with ALS, the couple traveled to Anne Arundel County, Maryland on a special jet equipped with medical devices that cater to Arthur's medical condition. They got married inside the jet as it sat on Maryland's tarmac before returning to Cincinnati that same day. This guy is dying.
Yeah.
And they are going through. This must have cost a fortune to do just so they could have gotten married.
Yeah. I know. It's maddening.
Continuing on. In 2013, Obergefell and Arthur's same-sex marriage was legally recognized in Maryland and by the federal government as confirmed by the United States Supreme Court in United States v. Windsor. However, Ohio state laws and the Ohio Constitution forbade same-sex marriage at the time. Okay, Ohio. So following Arthur's passing, the state, one, failed to record Obergefell as Arthur's surviving spouse, and two, listed Arthur as unmarried at the time of his death. I mean, fuck them!
Yep.
In 2013, Obergefell filed suit in the United States District Court for the Southern District of Ohio against respondent Richard Hodges, who is the director of the Ohio Department of Health. Go after him. Obergefell argued that Ohio laws that failed to recognize out-of-state same-sex marriages were unconstitutional and asked that the Register of Ohio issue death certificates recording Obergefell as Arthur's surviving spouse and listed John Arthur as married at the time. The district court ruled in favor of Obergefell, granting Obergefell's motion for a temporary restraining order and ordering that the local Ohio Register of Death Certificates reject a death certificate for Arthur that fails to record Arthur's marital status as married enlist Obergefell as his surviving spouse at the time of death. And, like, these other things, like, the courts are in their favor here.
Yeah, the courts are like, yeah, this is crazy. Bullshit.
So the district court reasoned that the 14th Amendment protects a fundamental right to keep existing marital relationships intact, and that Ohio failed to satisfactorily justify its refusal to recognize same-sex marriage under both a heightened intermediate scrutiny review and a less rigorous rational basis review. So, like, both when we look at this critically and when we just kind of glance at it, you really don't need it. I'm not seeing the argument.
No. Both in the term paper and in the article, you have failed.
You have failed it. And of course, on appeal, the United States Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit reversed the district's court ruling, holding that a state's decision to restrict marriage to a man and a woman does not violate a same-sex couple's constitutional rights. I don't even, like, read that sentence.
I don't even know how that... How do you argue that?
Like, all of you went to Yale.
Right.
Read that sentence. You know, I just, okay. That literally just doesn't make sense coming out of my mouth. Okay.
No.
So, does not violate a same-sex couple's constitutional rights, and that a state's refusal to recognize a same-sex marriage performed out of state does not violate 14th Amendment due process and equal protection rights. So, Obergefell v. Hodges addresses two core questions. This is coming from Oyez. Number one, the question is, does the 14th Amendment require a state to license a marriage between two people of the same sex? And two, does the 14th Amendment require a state to recognize a marriage between two people of the same sex that was legally licensed and performed in another state? These are two interesting questions to me.
Yeah.
I mean, number one is, like, the obvious one. But if number one is yes, then why do we need to ask number two? Because if number one, like, if the 14th Amendment is, like, yes, same-sex marriage, it's there in the 14th, right?
Right.
Then how can states then contest, like, other states? You know, then that's, like, that's it.
Oh, that's, the reciprocity, like, of it? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that comes up a little bit in the arguments between the justices, because they're like,
I love it.
They get confused a little bit, like, at one point, I forget which one it is, but they're like, no, that was your answer for question one. We're talking about question two. Like, there is a little bit of, like,
yeah,
why are we arguing, like, about this?
It's like the 14th Amendment, right, extends to all of us states. It's not like, mm-hmm. you know, it's not like Nebraska's like, no 14th Amendment over here.
Right.
So if it's protected under the 14th Amendment, then it doesn't matter what state you're in, because all of us
right.
are, like, under the 14th Amendment.
It applies to everybody, right?
Just saying. I love the question. Great. Let's get as clear as we need to get.
Yeah.
You know? Because people probably would have found a loophole through this, but, like,
yep.
I was just a weird question. But let's talk about the arguments.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's argue.
So I was reading these and I was like, oh my God, these are so good. There's no, yeah. Remember when we did the Masterpiece Cake Shop?
Oh, yeah.
Case. And there was a lot, like,
found out Sonia Bakes.
Sonia Bakes. She has dinner parties. This, and, like, those notes were spectacular for the reason, like, we learned so much about the justices' personal lives. This is more about, like, just the absolute, like, incredulity of some of these justices and what they think about the arguments against same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that, like, they stand up for these couples in their questions is, like, just amazing. And there's some really good, and the woman, Mary L. Bonato, has some really good, like, responses to John Roberts and Alito and some of the other justices that are interesting. So we're going to read these, you guys. We're going to do a little role play.
Role play.
Role play. So when you hear Lizzie, she's going to be reading the justices' questions.
I will indicate which justice that I am before I read what they say.
Yeah.
But I will be, it's going to be kind of like a United States of Terror situation where I'm going to be playing many roles.
Yeah.
And I am Jenna Collette.
You can do this. You can do this.
I can do this. And both liberal and conservative.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. And I'm going to read the responses and the text of the respondents and the petitioners who are, like, representing the couples and those who are representing the state entities who are arguing against gay marriage. So I, too, will say, like, so-and-so says, and then you'll know. So, let's start.
Let's jump in.
Pro-gay argument.
Yes, pro-gay! Yes, pro-gay!
Pro-gay arguments. Queen Mary, part one. Okay, this is Mary L. Bonato, and she says, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, already we love, ugh, already
I we're love in a that phrase. Zone. I love that saying. I'm just going to start saying that.
Yeah. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. The intimate and committed relationships of same-sex couples, just like those of heterosexual couples, provide mutual support and are the foundation of family life in our society. If a legal commitment, responsibility, and protection that is marriage is off limits to gay people as a class, the stain of unworthiness that follows on individuals and families contravenes the basic constitutional commitment to equal dignity. Indeed, the abiding purpose of the 14th Amendment is to preclude relegating classes of persons to second-tier status. I mean, yes!
Very, yes. There it is.
Oh, so
there
good.
There it is.
So good.
And of course, first justice to enter the stage is Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and she says, what do you do with the Windsor case, where the court stressed the federal government's historic deference to states when it comes to matters of domestic relations? Question. We love it. Right off the bat.
Yeah, yeah.
They came so ready.
They came to play.
The justices. She said three sentences and they were like, let's just get into it. Let's just get into it.
Also, that was a magnificent Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Thank you. Really, that was literally, I was like, how am I going to do this? And it just came right out.
It was so good. So Mary Bonato responds to Justice Ginsburg, and she says, states do have primacy over domestic relations, except that their laws must respect the constitutional rights of persons. And Windsor, meaning the Edie Windsor case that struck down DOMA, could not have been clearer about that. And here we have a whole class of people who are denied the equal right to be able to join in this very extensive government institution that provides protections for families.
And then Chief Justice John G. Roberts Jr. jumps in. Well, you say, join in the institution. The argument on the other side is that they're seeking to redefine the institution. Every definition that I looked up prior to about a dozen years ago defined marriage as unity between a man and a woman as husband and wife. Obviously, if you succeed, that core definition will no longer be operable. Okay, John. He's literally like, I've read four dictionaries in my life. Like, what?
Yeah.
Come on, John. Have more of an imagination. This is like pre-imaginative John. Same John that's like, you know what? This very vague piece of legislation Congress wrote actually includes, like, you can't discriminate against transgender people.
Right.
He had imagination now.
Right.
Where was it then?
Where was it then?
John.
And I mean, he's literally saying, like, I Googled it,
and I couldn't find one thing about a man and a man or a woman and a woman.
Right. Not what
you
I
know?
Found.
And I went to Yale. I'm actually not sure if he went to Yale. To me, they all go to Yale.
I know. They all.
Sorry if you don't go to Yale, except RBG. You know?
Yeah. No, he's very, yeah. I'm like, where did you look this up?
I'm sure in some
the Heritage Foundation
dictionary. He probably pulled it out of his bookshelf and went to get the dust off of it.
Yeah. Opened it up.
And just. Marriage.
Right.
Oh, damn it. This Oxford Dictionary from 1972 says, man and a woman. Whoop. Boom. Case closed.
Case closed.
I rest my case.
Put the book away.
Get the book out of here. Get the book out of here.
Oh.
I don't want that book anymore. Give me a second dictionary. Let's see if this holds water.
I do love that he was like, I found in multiple sources. I was like, okay. Okay.
I'm like, you opened four dictionaries. Right. Like, what other sources are there? Like, religious texts? Not what we need.
Not what we need right here.
Which is kind of where you find it's either a dictionary or it's a religious text. And a religious text has no basis in the court. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye. So Mary Bonato responds to Roberts. And he's just said, obviously, if you succeed in redefining marriage, that the core definition will no longer be operable. And she says, Mary says, I hope not, Your Honor. Because what we're really talking about here is a class of people who are, by state laws, excluded from being able to participate in this institution. And if Your Honor's question is about, does this really draw a sexual orientation line?
Roberts interrupts. He comes in. He cuts her off and he says, no, my question is, you're not seeking to join the institution. You're seeking to change what the institution is. The fundamental core of the institution is the opposite sex relationship. And you want to introduce into it a same sex relationship. Have you read Merriam-Webster? Highly recommend.
Highly recommend.
Highly I also, recommend.
I wanted her to be like, well, how do you propose that they join the institution? Or is it just that you don't think that they should be able to join the institution? Because if you want them to, like, if you don't want to change it, but you seem to be implying that it's okay that same-sex couple join it, how would you propose that they join it?
It's also interesting, this argument of you want to change the institution.
Right.
I feel like we've changed a lot of institutions.
So many, and not nearly enough, could argue, but so many.
A lot of institutions have changed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, how are we suddenly precious about the institution?
Right.
But anywho, it's about to get spicy because Samuel A. Alito Jr., a second junior, is about to hop on in. And Samuel jumps in and says, well, how do you account for the fact that, as far as I'm aware, until the end of the 20th century, there was never a nation or a culture that recognized marriage between two people of the same sex. Now, can we infer from that those nations and those cultures all thought that there was some rational, practical purpose for defining marriage in that way? Or is it your argument that they were all operating independently based solely on irrational stereotypes and prejudice? I took history at Yale, and apparently I don't remember the part where the Greeks all had same-sex relations. Men and men. They were all over the place. It's true.
It documented in statues.
Literally everywhere. They're naked for a reason, Samuel. It's easy to sculpt a cloth
right
over the loins, and yet they chose not to.
They let it all hang out.
Yeah, such an interesting, and it's such like an. I feel like we've built U.S. on this idea of like we came here to like. Make things our own and do things our own way and freedom of religion because nowhere else has that. And the leader was like, okay, well, everywhere else doesn't have gay marriage, so why should we?
Yeah.
Is the argument he's making.
I'm also like, are you allowed to take it? Like, he is very close to citing, like, in Zimbabwe. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's very close to, like, citing other cultures and other countries. Norms and laws that govern their states and countries, whatever. And I'm just like, I don't think you're allowed to take that into consideration. You're not arguing for the constitutional rights of people based on other countries. Things.
And then I would argue, Mr. Alito pro-gun rights, that every other major world country in this in universe has strict gun control.
Yep.
So if they do it, why don't we?
Right.
Just saying, I'm finding a lot of hypocrisy happening.
There's so much hypocrisy. So Samuel.
That's Alito. Oh, he jumped that's in. Alito.
He's very, you know, he's the practical purpose of defining marriage, blah, blah, blah. Other countries, nobody's ever thought of same-sex marriage as marriage, blah, blah, blah. And Mary's simple response is, Your Honor, my position is that times can blind.
Hell yeah, Mary.
And I was like, yeah, yeah, get it.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm not denying that this has not been the norm around the world. What I'm saying is, let's get past it. She's so calm. Lizzie, we would not make it. We would not make it. We
oh my God,
like,
I would
listen
be
here.
Thrown out. Alita would have said that and I would have been like, are you kidding me? Are you even joking right now, Samuel Alito Jr.? Like, right. I would have they would have thrown me out. They would have thrown me out. I would have been handcuffed by the guy that goes, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, at the top of it, you know?
We're going to take a quick break for a little word from our sponsors. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world. That ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Anyway, so sorry.
No, please. I mean,
sweating.
I'm so glad that we get to share this moment, because last night doing the notes, I was like getting real angry in my heart by myself in my apartment. Enter polygamy.
Of course.
So Mary continues for a while and she's like leading the discussion. And then sometime later, Douglas Hallward Dreimeyer enters the conversation as the other representative for pro-gay rights. And he says this. Quote, the court's decisions establish that there is not only a right to be married, but a right to remain married, that there is a protected liberty interest in the status of one's marriage once it has been established under law. So he's basically like, it doesn't just disappear. Like, you
yeah,
got married.
Just evaporate, yeah.
You continue to be married until you until you file for divorce or an annulment.
Exactly right.
until you take those extreme steps.
And then, of course, how do I even introduce? May he rest in peace, Antonin Scalia enters the fold.
Yep.
And he says, even if that marriage is not lawful under receiving state's law, right? Okay, first of all, Antonin, what do you, where are he's getting, all over the place.
We really should have known.
He goes on to say, is that right? No matter. I mean, suppose, well, let's say someone gets married in a country that permits polygamy. Does the state have to acknowledge that marriage? I'm like, what? I'm like, Antonin, we're in this country.
Yeah.
Stay here.
Yeah.
We're talking about Kentucky and Michigan, not the United States and Germany.
Right.
Get a grip.
Get a grip.
Focus.
Bring it back. I'm just like, bring it back.
I feel like Antonin is the one who's always like, okay, but polygamy?
Yeah.
He always somehow finds polygamy in the argument.
I mean, it's really like just telling of where he is. And to Douglas Hallward Dreimeyer's credit, he basically is like, no, they don't have to recognize those marriages. That's ridiculous. Like, he is much more.
We're not talking about polygamy.
We're not talking about polygamy. He's much more eloquent than that and, like, very good about not stepping on the justice's toes. But I
Well, sure. I feel like they probably were prepared. I feel like they were doing their, like, practice.
Yeah.
And their interns were like, okay, and now the Antonin Scalia polygamy question. And they were ready.
They were like, okay.
Got it.
Oh, my God. So that gives you an idea of, like, the pro-gay kind of exchanges. And some, those are all of, like, you know, Mary Bonato and Douglas Hallward Dreimeyer were the ones arguing for these couples to be able to get married, remain married, and adopt their children. Now we're going to do the anti-gay arguments and just, you know, kind of buckle in.
Buckle in. Just
buckle in. Buckle in, or buckle up is the phrase, maybe. Okay, so Lizzie's still reading the justices. I'm still reading the lawyers. So John J. Birch starts, and he says, this is not too far along after he starts his arguments, and he says, it's about who gets to decide that question. Oh, okay, so let's back up. The main thrust of the anti-gay side argument is that the court shouldn't decide who gets married. It's the voters who should decide who gets married. Yeah. I know. You can't see Lizzie's face. Her brow is very furrowed and she's very upset.
Okay. Okay. Because we decided everything else that's in the Constitution.
Right.
We voted on all of it. Like,
right.
Okay. Okay, John. Okay, John.
Yeah. So that's a backup. So he says, it's about who gets to decide that question. Is it the people acting through the democratic process, or is it the federal courts? And we're asking you to affirm every individual's fundamental liberty interest in deciding the meaning of marriage. And I think this whole case really turns on the questions that Justice Alito asked. He's also, like, using the argument of the pro-gay lawyers against to support him, because they've been talking about, like, fundamental liberty and like, government interest and liberty interest, like, all mm-hmm. terms and words that they have, like, used to talk about their argument. And he's mm-hmm. like, well, it's in our liberty interest that the voters right. get to decide who gets married.
Okay. And you know what? What's about to make us all feel really great is that none other than the queen of my actual heart, Sonia Sotomayor, jumps in and yeah. she says, I'm sorry. Nobody is taking that away from anybody. Every single individual in this society chooses, if they can, their sexual orientation or who to marry or not marry. I suspect even with us giving gay rights to marry, that there are some gay people who will choose not to. Just as there are some heterosexual couples who choose not to marry. So we're not taking anybody's liberty away.
The fact that she starts off with, I'm sorry.
And I know she did not say it how I said it, but it reads as, I'm sorry. I'm sure she said, I'm sorry. Nobody's yep. taking it. You know, she's yep. like obviously yep. very measured and, you know, yep. better than I'll ever be. But like on paper, it's like, what?
Open to artistic interpretation for sure.
I'm so sorry. so sorry. I just need to explain to you what like choice is, and it's right. the ability to or not.
Right.
You know?
Right. So John J. Birch turns back and he says, "But we're talking about the fundamental liberty interest in deciding the question of what marriage means. And to get that..."
And then none other than, oh my God, friend of the bicycle, Stephen G. Breyer, jumps in for this monologue.
Yeah.
And he says, "I don't know that that's... I mean, leaving that to one side, I thought that I heard the answer to the question being given in respect to tradition of 2,000 years into the democratic ballot box and so forth was quite simple. What I heard was, one, marriage is fundamental. I mean, certainly that's true for 10,000 years. And marriage, as the states administer it, is open to vast number of people who both have children, adopt children, don't have children, all over the place. But there is one group of people whom they won't open marriage to. So they have no possibility to participate in that fundamental liberty. That is, the people of same sex who wish to marry. And so we ask, why? And the answer we get is, well, people have always done it." You know, you could have answered that one the same way.
Yeah. It's so good.
Stephen and I are the same. Okay, mm-hmm. Sorry. "You know, you could have answered that one the same way we talk about racial segregation. Or two, because certain religious groups do think it's a sin, and I believe that they sincerely think it. There's no question about their sincerity, but is a purely religious reason on the part of some people sufficient? And then when I look for reason 3, 4, and 5, I don't find them." So he's literally, everything I just said, yeah. Stephen said.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know he said that.
Yep.
But it's right.
Yeah.
It's like this thing that you're describing. We could have applied this thing to all of these other things.
Yep.
And yet we didn't. And you wouldn't, and you would never argue what you're arguing right now in terms of like racial segregation.
Right.
You'd say, no, we should have segregated. We did the right thing. Blah, 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 right. blah. It's like, oh, okay, well, your argument falls apart, my dude.
Yeah.
Stephen.
I know. It's
and
so...
he taught, I mean, to just take a monologue in the middle of this. Yes.
Yeah.
I love Stephen.
And I love that he drops the religious thing in there because he's like, I really think some people think this is very wrong. And they yeah. sincerely think that it's very wrong.
But is it sufficient?
Is it sufficient on the part of some people? Because some people believe this. Is that sufficient? And right. I love his like, and then when I look for other reasons, I don't see them.
I don't see them. I just see two reasons and like they're weak.
And they're weak reasons. They're bullshit and reasons. They're weak. Yeah.
Oh, Stephen.
Yeah. I know. So
Thank
good.
Thank you for giving us that gift.
I know. It's so good. Like, I just, it's really like they should, like there needs to be acting out of these, some of these oral arguments sometimes because they're just so good. They're just so good. So the justices hear these arguments and they make their decision. It is a 5-4 decision. So it passes. So this is all coming from Oye. "The court held that the due process clause of the 14th Amendment guarantees the right to marry as one of the fundamental liberties it protects. And that analysis applies to same-sex couples in the same manner as it does to opposite-sex couples."
Gorgeous.
So Justice Anthony Kennedy delivered the opinion for the 5-4 majority, which also included justices, are we surprised, Breyer, Kagan, Sotomayor, and Ginsburg. Kennedy, in his opinion, writes, quote, "The Constitution promises liberty to all within its reach, a liberty that includes certain specific rights that allow persons within a lawful realm to define and express their identity. The petitioners in these cases seek to find that liberty by marrying someone of the same sex and having their marriages deemed lawful on the same terms and conditions as marriages between persons of the opposite sex." He then goes on to say that the respondents who are arguing against gay marriage think that to extend the franchise, quote, "would demean a timeless institution if the concept and lawful status of marriage were extended to two persons of the same sex. Marriage, in their view, is by its nature a gender-differentiated union of man and woman. This view has long been held and continues to be held in good faith by reasonable and sincere people here and throughout the world. He's literally like, the bitches next to me think this.
Yes. Yes.
These man bitches think this. Yeah. The petitioners acknowledge this history, but contend that these cases cannot end there. Were their intent to demean the revered idea and reality of marriage, the petitioners' claims would be of a very different order. But that is neither their petition nor their submission. To the contrary, it is the enduring importance of marriage that underlies the petitioners' contentions, which is exactly what you said at the top.
Mm-hmm.
This, they say, is their whole point. Far from seeking to devalue marriage, the petitioners seek it for themselves because of their respect and need for its privileges and responsibility. And their immutable nature dictates that same-sex marriage is their only real path to this profound commitment. Who's literally saying they're not devaluing it. They actually, like, hold it in very high regard.
Right. They're literally doing more than what probably a heterosexual couple would do to get married. Like, they are taking more...
They're literally hopping, like, on planes at their moment of death.
While one of them is dying.
Yeah.
You know? To get married. They hold it in high esteem.
Yeah.
You know? But let's talk about the dissent. So Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the dissent, joined by Scalia and Thomas. Alito wrote his own, but also dissented. This is what I love about this
very angry.
Is that everybody writes a dissent.
Yeah.
And they just join each other's. So... Yep. For Roberts, we're talking about Roberts' dissent, which is like kind of the main one because he's like the Chief Justice.
Yeah.
It's like the official one. Roberts wrote, quote, petitioners make strong arguments rooted in social policy and considerations of fairness. They contend that same-sex couples should be allowed to affirm their love and commitment through marriage, just like opposite-sex couples. That position has undeniable appeal. Over the past 6 years, voters and legislators in 11 states and the District of Columbia have revised their laws to allow marriage between two people of the same sex. And he continues, but this court is not a legislature. I'm gonna fucking
hate.
Ooh!
What is your job?
But also it's like, we're going back and forth, John.
Yeah.
John, okay, so this court is not a legislature. Whether same-sex marriage is a good idea should be of no concern to us. Under the Constitution, judges have the power to say what the law is, not what it should be. The people who ratified the Constitution authorized courts to exercise, quote, neither force nor will, but merely judgment. Do not quote the Constitution at me right now. I'm so angry at you. It's
but
just
that's
like
how far he has to dig. He has to dig back to, like, what does it say we're allowed to do in the Constitution? Like, that's how far he goes back.
Right.
And it's like,
but I'm just like, what have the courts done?
Yeah.
Over the past 200 years, if not this, deciding if people are, it's not even rewriting the legislation. It's if the legislation in place extends to these people.
Right.
This vague 14th Amendment, Equal Protection Clause, Civil Rights Act extends. It's interpreting. It's not rewriting. It's not like we're actually like taking a pen and just like putting a little arrow and saying like same-sex too, exclamation point. Like that's not.
It's also unclear to me who he wants to write this legislation because.
I guess like, Congress.
Congress, which would be like.
Well,
the
that's
states,
what he wants to do with gerrymandering.
But the states, like, he wants Congress to write a law that's like, the states must recognize the marriages from all the other states. Like, they would have a field day. They would have a hissy fit because that's not states' rights. Like, the federal government can't come in and be like,
sure,
you must do this. And then clearly the other option is what was already happening, which is that states make their own laws. And you can't have, like, Ohio must recognize the marriages from the other states. Like, that's ridiculous.
Right.
So it's unclear to me who exactly he wants to like write this imaginary piece of legislation, but he's a smart enough man to know that like that's impossible. That like the legislation that he wants is actually like kind of an impossible thing to write for the reasons that I just stated. So he's just arguing that like they shouldn't get to marry. It's insane.
Well, we can't wait to hear what Alito has to say. God. So he wrote separately, of course, he said, oh, I love this. Quote, "The Constitution says nothing about a right to same-sex marriage, but the court holds that the term liberty in the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment encompasses this right." You know what the Constitution also doesn't say anything about? Citizens United.
Yeah.
You know, if corporations are people, why? Because there were no corporations when the Constitution was written. This, I can't. I'm just about to lose my mind. Okay.
No, and the idea of campaign finance would have been.
What?
Wild. a wild thought that, like, you would use a doubloon to buy an ad in what paper? Like,
in what paper? Some guy's, like, basement press.
I'm just like, you're totally right. That's not in the Constitution. Do you know what is in the Constitution? Slavery. Should we still have that? Like, this idea that, like, if it's not in the Constitution, we can't touch it. And it's like, okay.
He continues. We're not done with him.
No.
"Our nation was founded upon the principle that every person has an unalienable right to liberty. But liberty is a term of many meanings." Yeah. "For classical liberals, it may include economic rights, now limited by government regulation. For social democrats, it may include the right to a variety of government benefits. For today's majority, it has a distinctively postmodern meaning. To prevent 5 unelected justices,"
You're
also one of those, okay.
Right.
From imposing their personal vision of liberty upon the American people, the court has held that liberty under the Due Process Clause should be understood to protect only those rights that are..." Wait, I'm sorry. I had to pause because it's like they're interpreting, like, it's their interpretation of what the word liberty means. But we also did that with, I don't know, equality.
Right. And we also did that with privacy, which I'm sure he's against Roe v. Wade.
Due process.
Right.
Like, we're all interpreting what these words mean to us.
Right. And nobody's quite sure what, like, naturally born citizen means. Like, what the fuck is that?
I don't even know.
Naturally born. Like, nobody's defined that, really.
Yeah. So Alito is continuing. "The court has held that liberty under the Due Process Clause should be understood to protect only those rights that are, quote, deeply rooted in this nation's history and tradition. And it is beyond dispute that the right to same-sex marriage is not among those rights. So is equality for Black people."
Yeah.
If we want to talk about this nation's history and tradition.
Right.
"Slavery was around a lot longer than it hasn't been around, my dude."
Yep. Reckon.
Ugh. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we should be sort of looking at this nation's history as, like, a way to have, like, precious traditions. In fact, I think what we're seeing now is we're just having to kind of actually reject all of the traditions that we have because they're inherently racist and misogynistic and uninclusive and abusive, you know.
Yeah.
Alito, I wanted so much better from you.
I know. I didn't expect it, but I wanted it.
I mean, I knew he voted against us. We talked about it in our biopic of him, but just having the text is no good.
It's no good.
But the good news is we had 5 justices, 5 people who looked at it and was like, you know what? Yeah. And agreed with literally every lower court in the states. So it wasn't like they were making this huge, other than the 6th Court of Appeals, it's not like they were making this huge, like, you know what? All of you said no and we said yes thing.
Yeah.
There were so many people in the judicial branch that were like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's so interesting because it's just so, I wish I could just ask more questions. Like, I wish I could just sit down with John Roberts and be like, just walk me through it.
Right.
Walk me through who is supposed to be doing this.
Right.
And walk me through, like, why it's these cases that the court shouldn't be deciding, but other cases they should be. Like, I genuinely, it's not even to, like, be mad. It's to be like, I'm missing a piece of your puzzle. And I probably will still disagree, but I just want to understand. Not agree, but at least understand.
I would like to understand.
Because I feel like it just gets me all worked up.
Yep.
But the good news is that the majority ruled gay marriage is legalized in the United States. The White House lit up in the rainbow colors. It was an amazing day. Like, I remember it. It was crazy. It was just like, oh my God, it's over.
Yep.
You know, it's just, it's so amazing that it happened. You know, shout out to, big shout out to Kennedy, Sotomayor, Ginsburg, and Kagan and Breyer.
They were like,
like five people. Can you believe that it like ultimately rests? I mean, it doesn't ultimately, but at the end of the day, five people are the reason that the LGBTQ community can get married.
Yep.
Five people.
Yep.
I don't know. Whew.
Yep.
It's insane. It's insane. But, you know, they did it. And I love that the announcement was made in June, no? It was like during Pride Month.
Yeah, it was June. It was like, we have to look up the day of the anniversary, like, might be now. Because it was it was the Friday before Pride. Because I went down to...
I also love just the...
Just like the marketability of the timing of the decision.
It's just, it's great when it works out that way. The timing was amazing.
It was so good. I went down to Stonewall and it was so great because like there were lots of people down there and like it was a really happy, joyous day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a happy, joyous thing. We love and support the LGBTQ community and their right to love and marry whomever they wish.
Yep.
And so that's our episode. Yeah. Again, happy Pride.
Happy Pride, everybody.
We can't stress it enough. It's just such a wonderful thing to celebrate. And so, yeah, if you like what you heard, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Let's Get Civical. You can rate us, you can review us, and you can subscribe to us. We love you so, so much, and we will see you next Wednesday.
Goodbye.